I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on Armoring Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Toby Keith. I don't even know where Toby Keith's from, but he sings country music, so I figured I'd play it. Joining me now is Mike Musselman. He's from San Diego, California. So, what's going on? It's raining in Granbury. What's going on? What's that all about? Are you guys getting bad weather? Is it just normal Texas weather? What's going on?
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, what?
Why are you so fast?
It wasn't me. I didn't do anything. Oh, you know what he's going to say? He's going to ask, why do I have to bring up that he's from San Diego? That's a prediction. What happened?
You hung up on me.
No, I didn't. I'm sitting here with my hands on the table.
My question was...
Okay, hold on. I predicted what you were going to say. Okay, well...
Yeah, I know. You heard me. Go ahead.
No, I didn't. I didn't hear you. But I predicted what
Why do you always ask people where they're from? For you. Like, I'm just curious. Because I don't ask people that.
Well...
I hear you.
I don't know
if that's like a Midwest, it's a North Dakota thing.
No.
I'll explain
it to you. In interviewing, I found out that there's ways to disarm people when you interview them. And the first way is get them to talk about something that they're really comfortable talking about, and that's themselves. And then when you get them out of being nervous about being interviewed and you ask them about themselves, there'll be normally something humorous that comes up, and then you kind of go there. And it's kind of a disarming technique. And then all of a sudden you're just having a conversation, and they tend to be good interviews.
I would tell you it's probably not a disarming technique, and here's why. Just hear me out. So... For instance, people like myself, where you're born doesn't define who you are. There's no bearing on it. You know, it's like, I and every person born never got a choice of where they wanted to be born, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and I understand that you say that you think it's a disarming technique, but if someone, let's say, if I said, Where are you born to it? You know, and they look as they're kind of impoverished, I should say. They didn't have the money, or they looked like they were not, they didn't have a lot of money or not an opportunity. I feel like maybe you're pigeonholed. They would feel like, man, this guy's making me a stereotype. You know, oh, I was born in Detroit. What does that make you? You know, nothing.
That makes that makes you a Tiger fan, and that means I'm going to bust on you for being a Tiger fan.
No, I mean, like I said, I just don't under. I guess for me, because like I said, I was born in 1966. I don't remember. San Diego in 1966 is completely different than it is today in 2018.
That's not the question. The question's about you, not about San Diego and a comparative analysis of San Diego then and today. Question's about you and your life. Where were you born? Where were you born and raised? I was born in Sacramento, California, born and raised there. Oh, really? That's a shithole. Well, you know what? You're exactly right.
Yeah, and I would argue the whole raised thing, because I'm not raised.
Oh, my God. Are you going to be like...
Find you as a person today. Your childhood?
Did you say I wasn't raised? What were you then? If you weren't raised by somebody, your mom and dad.
No.
What happened
raised,
to you?
Reared. you're reared.
Okay. So we're going to do this all this for an hour? We're going to do this.
Marine Corps raised me.
No, it didn't. Your parents raised you.
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did.
No, they didn't, right? Well, then I'm the unique one. No, they didn't.
Then you are unique.
Well, listen, my mom and dad was divorced at mid-age, and, you know, at the early age, dad and I didn't see eye to eye a lot. My mom worked all the time. So, you know, we didn't do a lot of those family things. So, like I said, I wasn't raised. If anything, me and my sister raised ourselves.
Okay, well, see what's come out of the question, where were you born and raised? And you say, and it's like, wow, this guy's a different cat.
Who, you?
You.
You're the same cat. No. You're the same
cat. You're a different cat. This guy's kind of a different guy, Mike Musselman. Wow.
I would say that.
What an interesting response to that question.
Yeah.
And we get some insight. We get some insight.
And I think if you ask my sister that, she would feel, it would be offended, but I would say that.
Hold on. You cut out. I don't know what you're doing, but you cut out. I wouldn't say my sister would be offended. Go.
And we're cutting out.
No, we aren't. You are.
Yeah, one of us. I got all the bars. Me and my sister had a talk about this. We're laughing. The one good quality that we got as kids was to learn to be independent and make it on your own because no one's going to be there to help you. And that was a blessing in disguise.
Right.
Because later on in life, it was going to pay huge rewards and dividends.
Yeah. Right. But your daughter certainly isn't grown up that way. I mean, I know how you raised Megan.
No.
She's an independent girl. I mean, you talk about changing tires.
Yeah.
And I mean, you raised Megan to be an independent, strong person. But she's grown up in a loving.
She relies on the family. Yeah. Right. She relies. We all rely. You know, it's like we talk about it. I've blown up with them with both of them one time because. I think we were talking about something, and she's, you know, they're like, I think the comment was, you're blaming me, or, you know, I'm not the best. And I lost it, man, and I got pissed. And it was like, listen, you two, I'm going to tell you something one time. There's three people in this world that I trust more than anybody else. Me, you, and you. And we together, we will never do anything to sell you short, undercut. We're always there for you. This is a team effort, guys. It takes all three of us. So don't ever think that, you know, and I was pissed. Because I think they just made a comment like, oh, you know. And I said, no. That's not how it works. You never go against the family. Ever. Inexcusable, never forgettable sin is you go against the family.
Yeah, but you know what? That's you didn't have to do that. That's like Peggy dropping the hammer on that woman who said, "I'm so sorry about your husband," when she checked widow. That woman didn't know. Your family didn't grow up like you grew up. And so that comment, the way you take it based on the way you grew up, right? Is completely different than they would intend it because they don't. Their prism is not cut like yours is. They, you know, they're involved in loving families, and so it's a comment they make, you know. But when you hear it based on the way your prism's cut and your view of the world, it's a completely different. And I'll tell you what, my family's closer to yours, because my family exploded like an IED in my face. You know?
Yeah.
And I haven't asked. Yeah, I had until I was probably about 13. I had a wonderful childhood, but I think of it kind of like I think of leadership. Sometimes to work for great leaders is a curse because now you're pissed when you go to work for the average guys and they can't do it. It's like, I wish I would have never had that experience because I wouldn't be so furious. There's part of me that wishes I kind of grew up like you because to be in a loving family and then to see it detonate in front of you.
That's got to be more traumatic than anything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah. See, when we say a loving family, I had a loving family. It's just they weren't there. You know, I had an absent family. And the thing that's sad about it is my sister and everybody else, we're not as close as other brothers and sisters. I mean, I talk to my sister maybe a couple times a month. You know, I'm not calling my sister on every little, like, go, guess what? I know people, and I'm not saying that I don't want to be talking to her every day, because there are families that do that. There's families that still live by one another.
Right.
You know, they can't sprout out. I mean, first thing I wanted to do is get the hell away. I wanted to go find my own thing.
I've never said this. I've never said this on the air, but I went away to college and could not get out of my hometown, Sacramento, quick enough. My life in my house was not happy, and it wasn't happy because there were a lot of selfish, destructive people in my house. And I left and I never went back. And my sister, God rest her soul, Maureen, who's dead now, my sister who died of exposure because of alcoholism, she followed me down to San Diego to go to school. And so my mom calls me when I'm at school and she goes, I have some great news. And I said, what's that? And, because there wasn't very much great news going on at the time. She said, Maureen's gonna come down to go to school. And I said, no. My mom was floored. What? I don't want that. I have great friends down here. I don't want or need that in my life down here. Tell her to go someplace else. My mom was absolutely floored. My sister got on the phone and lied her ass off, telling me that she no longer did the things that she used to do and blah, 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 blah. And then came down and did them all again. it's hard. It's interesting. Last week I had a guy on who is a professional interventionist. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I had somebody call me and say, I was listening to that. And when we were in Afghanistan, my brother called me, and he threatened to kill himself because he wanted money, and I told him no, threatened to kill himself. And you know what I told him? And I said, what? I told him, man up and do it then. Either go to rehab or kill yourself, okay? But you are killing our family, and I'm more than done with it. So be a man. Either have the courage to follow through and kill yourself. And I was telling my kids that, and I said, and they were like, I said, you think I'm bad? And I said, and they were like, we were talking about it. I said, you can't understand because you've never lived in that world where that comment comes from. I can though. Every family event is painful. You don't want to be near your family. It doesn't, you know. You run from it.
You're just out of place.
You can't understand it.
Yeah.
And they look at me like, holy shit. Holy shit. I'm like, yeah, you know, and God bless you because you don't know that. And I'm happy that you can't fathom that because that means you don't live that because it's not a happy place because there's no place warmer than your family. And so I said, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I just felt, I mean, going back, I just felt so out of place. I mean, yeah, I love, you know, and I'll take this back, you know, like my aunt and my cousin Donna are closer to me than anybody else.
Yeah, my cousin and my two cousins, my cousin Tom and my cousin Patty, are like brothers and sisters to me, and they're closer to me than my organic family. And here's one of the things I say. Look, our biological relationship is the least significant part of being a family. We're a family by virtue of the way we treat each other. And so when you treat us like shit for years, fuck you, man. We don't have anything in common. I wouldn't be friends with you if you were the last person on the earth. I would put you on the fucking island if there were just two of us. I would have nothing to do with you. And then you get the, oh, you're so harsh and you're so black and white. No, I'm not.
Why do you got to be so, why do you got to be this way? You know, like, you finally, I've had that conversation. You know, you're like much later and, you know, they're like, oh, can't you let it go? Can't you let it go? No. What are you talking about? Let's pretend the first 18 years of your life didn't happen that way.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? No. Well, you know, and then you can, like you said, you can never come back from that, man. Ever. You know, you just got to keep moving on, accept it for who you are. You know, it's kind of like what we talked about, you know. The speech that I still give to, you know, people, like we said, trauma people and things like that, or people, suicidal guys. And I ask them, I said, you know, first thing is, when I tell them in the room, is I want you to all understand there is no such word as normal in the context that we use as people in society. Normal doesn't exist, okay? But it doesn't exist because each one of us, we have a definition for our own normal, our own, the way we do things, you know? That's normal. So even families, we can't judge families like, oh, that's not a normal family. Based on what family? Their family? Yeah, that's actually a really normal family. I mean, I hate that word normal or, you know, it's just, this is what it should be like. Like, who says? The movies? You know, what are you talking about?
Some fairy tale?
Like a fairy tale? This ain't Disney World, buddy. I wish it was, because then I charge fucking $4,000 admission every year. But, you know, I hate the word normal. And I, like I said, when I tell people, first of all, if you can accept the fact that there's no such word as normal, okay? Who's having a hard time with that? You know, okay, I am. Well, I'm going to tell you, then this path to coexisting and everything else is going to be very difficult for you. Because you have this preconceived world of normal. And I think you and I, and there's a lot of people, but we're talking about you and I, because we experienced abnormal behavior in a family setting with, you know, that kind of thing early, we adjusted to it. Our rheostat was set much wider than in most people. It's really interesting that we talk about, you know, way things are, the way things, should be based on what? You know, someone's book, an interview by some dim-witted celebrity? You know, that's how we live our lives. We chase this fallacy of, this is what everything needs to be like? No. You know, I think it comes down to as simple as, don't be a dick, you know, to your people and things like that, and treat them with respect. That's normal. That's like, it's not really normal. It's what you should do. It's what you expect, right?
Yes. That's the way the fairy tale goes. It's that, hey, yes, we're biologically related, but we're bound by the love that we and affection that we show each other, the way we go out of our way for each other, the way we care for each other, and we've done that since we were kids, and that's why we're close to this day.
Born into that.
Yeah, that's why we're close to this day. But if that's not a part of your life, and it, look, the way somebody gets shoved out of your life is you're not born like that, right?
Right.
The people that can hurt you the most are the people, are your family. You allow them into the
Ones that are closest to you.
Right. You allow them into the inner sanctum, and when they get out their knives in the inner sanctum and start slashing, you can only endure that for so long before you say, okay, you're out here. I'm not going to put you on the island yet, but, right, you are outside the 12-mile territorial limit. So you can steam pass, right? We'll fake it in front of people, but just stay out there, okay? That's where you're going to be. And so it's a self-preservation technique because you can't get...
Staying alive.
Yeah.
Surviving.
Surviving.
I've been training it all my life. And what got me there? You.
Yeah. I didn't get me
you
there.
Put me there.
I didn't opt for that. Like, oh yeah, let's shove this loving father or mother I have. Let me shove your ass away. That's not what happened.
No, because you realize at an early age, the closer you are to people, the more it hurts. So you push people away. And like I said, I was that way for almost my whole life.
Yeah, mine was.
Anybody get close to me.
Yeah, mine was worse. I didn't start out that way, but I got that way, and I think it sucks. Here's a interesting email. So, what kind of relationships do you guys have with your family?
Oh, I have a great relationship. I mean, I've learned, like you said, you know, we talk about leadership. I'm glad because now anything I do is better than what we had.
Right.
Everything there. As far as, you know, the way you talk, the way you manipulate, everything. But yeah, it's different because, you know, like I said, nothing changes. It's just the same way, but what you don't want to do is have that same experience.
Okay, so you peacefully coexist with your family.
Well, yeah, I mean, because we each respect our own boundaries. But we're there for each other. We do things, you know.
Okay, all right.
We're not judgmental.
Are both your parents still alive?
Yes.
Okay, and then you have a brother and a sister. Yes.
No, I have three sisters and a brother.
Okay.
It's complicated. I have... So, man, we're going to hear everything today.
See? And all I had to do was ask, where were you born and raised?
I'm adopted.
It all comes out.
So, I'm adopted. And my real father, I never knew. You know, so my mother... got married, she got married very early age, had me, and then it didn't work out, and it didn't last very long, and then she left with me. And then in my father now, Tim, he adopted me at a very early age and was there in my life as my father, you know, as far as everything goes. So I never knew my real father. I don't hold anything against him, you know. So my sister is really my half-sister, my sister Chris. And my brother Don is my half-brother.
Okay.
And then my dad got remarried.
Okay.
My dad and my mom got remarried. He remarried a lady that had a daughter from a previous marriage. So that's my stepmother's sister.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Then he had a daughter, with his new wife. So that would be kind of like, that'd still be my stepsister, I think. Because my dad's not my biological father. He is my father by me, just the simple fact of being adopted.
Right.
So I think it's still my stepsister. So I have two stepsisters. Well, I actually have three stepsisters and a stepbrother. Or a half-brother, half-sister, and two stepsisters, right?
Right.
Is the correct terminology? Yeah.
Fuck, that's fucking complicated.
Yeah. So, but that's why I tell everybody it's, right. It's just my sister. It's my three sisters.
Okay. All right. I got it.
Yeah. Because, you know, yeah, it is. It's complicated. You put your eyes around it. You know, and like I said, we had, my Aunt Jane is down here. My Uncle Jim passed away down in Lufkin, Texas. So I had called her and told her, here's what I want you to do. I want you to fly into Dallas. I'll pick you up and we'll drive down together. And, you know, you'd do that? I said, well, yes. And here's why. I don't want you to be alone through this. I don't want you to go through this alone. And, you know, but I want you to come in and stay with Tina because my daughter and my wife adore my Aunt Jane too. I mean, she's out of this world. She's virtually, you know, like having another mom. And so, and having Donna is like having another sister and my cousin. And so she came out here and I told her, then you stay on the back end and then you leave happy. You know, you don't have to live with that whole, your brother's, you know, funeral, you know, the whole thing, and then leave with that note. You can leave with the happiness. So she stayed with us on the back end, laughed during, had wine with my wife, laughed about things, went to dinner. She met, you know, Ron and Ralph and those guys. And she left on a happy note. We were all happy. So I think that was good. You know, so, but my Aunt Jane is, like I said, like you said, she's family, yes, but she's, because, you know what she would do for you, and it's always, you're born in, you have whatever your parents and your siblings, and you're born into it. But really, your family is those that were there for you at the times that you needed the most, you know, gave you the information that you can go on with and do great things with. And the ones you rely on, no? Doesn't have to be, you know, I'm born into it. Because
let me just say, I would contend that, and it's interesting, I'll say it again, biology is the least significant aspect in a family.
Yeah.
The least. You know, what trumps all of that is, you know, how you treat each other. I'll just tell you, my mom's dead. I don't speak to my father. My oldest sister, Peggy, everybody met. My sister younger than me by about a year and 2 months. Maureen is the one that, you know, died of, hypothermia as a result of alcoholism. And then my youngest sister, is the one that I've been closest to throughout my life. And that is my sister Susan. And so,
I can't always get confused because your ex-wife is also Susan, right?
Yeah, there's a number of Susans. I have Susans in my life. So,
And my mom is Susan. That's right.
And I'm divorced and, my ex-wife and I are still good friends. She moved and I moved her and, we have dinner, probably once a week with our daughter Colleen. And,
that's great, man.
Yeah.
That's,
and I'll tell you what, all of that, much of that is a result of my family experience. Cause I mean, in spite of the fact that my wife and I are no longer married, that was not going to destroy what we had built for our children. And we were going to be able to put that behind us and be loving parents and not destroy the family that we had created that was so important to us. And because that's not the family I grew up in. My parents annihilated our family because they couldn't get along. They didn't speak after their divorce. And so everything that we knew growing up was destroyed. Everything. And it sucked. It absolutely positively sucked. And it's been affected. And then, hold on, email. You don't talk to your father. No. My father doesn't know my kids. I probably shouldn't say this shit on the air, but I will. He doesn't know my kids. I've gone to war 3 different times for my country for almost 3 years. My father's not once visited my kids. And at some point, the truth is the truth, right?
Correct.
And you can't hide behind it. Right. And you can kid yourself and say, oh, well, there's a reason and blah, blah, blah. The truth is, you know, the truth is the truth. And the truth needs no salesman. And so.
But I think like you, you're fine with it. You've moved on. You've learned to, you know, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say fine with it.
Right. No.
It bothers you.
I want it to be different.
You're not going to let it consume you.
I want it to be a different way, but it doesn't matter what I want. Because the truth is the truth.
Is what you get, yeah.
Right, and so I don't, and I'm okay with it.
It's coexisting shit.
Right, and I don't, let me tell you, I don't hate my dad. I don't wish him anything will. I have no ill will regarding him. But I'm not going to wait for something that's not coming. And so, you know, and I've been told like, holy shit, man, you know, you need to go set that straight. And
no, I don't want to.
I don't want to. There's, you know, and let me tell you, I don't want to play charades anymore. Okay, which is what it comes down to. And so I don't.
Right.
I choose not to. And you know what? And I'm okay because, and that's why I think the words at Ken Pipes' funeral in the letter that he wrote to his family. And I've said this before on the program, you know, a number of times, but, you know, sitting there next to General McMonagle, Small World stuff, who impacted Mike's life and my life in huge ways. General James McMonagle, sitting next to he and his wife in San Marcos, California at this funeral. And they pull out a letter that he wrote to his family that he placed in a spot that he knew that they would find it. And he, in the letter was this sentence: none of us knows what happens next, but for me, heaven was being here with you.
Yeah.
And you know, I said relative to my sister's discussion and the things we say about post-traumatic stress, the truth needs no salesman. It hits with a thud. They read that, and I thought it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever heard, because here's this man, even leading from his grave. He is easing their pain in a very, very deliberate way. And I thought, what a
putting them first, always, yeah.
What a beautiful thing to do. That's what a family does.
Yeah. Just because you get together on Easter and Thanksgiving and Christmas doesn't make
that's
you
bullshit.
A family.
Yeah. That's bullshit.
It is such bullshit. And I hate that.
Yeah. Yeah. My kid.
Nothing more. It's kind of like you make fun of me all the time about, you know, the whole Valentine's Day, you know? You know, like every day is Valentine's Day with me, baby.
Here.
No, I mean, but seriously. But why do you need a holiday to come together as a family and celebrate our love and joy? You know, do that all year long.
Yeah,
but
you know,
Mike, another day with a lot of food.
I think you and I are scarred by, you know, our lives, you know, and a lot of people aren't. A lot of people aren't. You know, I went to my, a year ago, Michael, remember this, I'm in Indiana, I'm in Indiana for my youngest sister's second wedding, okay? And it was that weekend when the Osprey crashed, and Patrick was part of the 31st Mew, and so dealt with that weekend. Anyway, same weekend, we're at an event at my sister's house. My dad's there, and I'm absolutely cordial. My oldest son, who's named after my father, walks into the room, and my dad looks at him and says, "Who's that?" Oh, that's Michael's son that's named after you. Oh. Yeah. 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 So, yeah, well, geez, that's pretty harsh. You don't talk to your dad.
Right.
It's not as harsh as not knowing your grandkids. And not making the choice. And let me tell you, my kids are great kids. Right?
And I've met two of them, and they are. They're great kids.
They're just like, I meet Megan, right? Megan is fun. She's respectful. She's fun to have around, and a girl you want to talk to. Okay?
Yeah.
Awesome. And you don't want to know my kids?
You know, and that's, you said it, we were driving, and you said, we were talking about this, and I won't go into detail about it, but, you know, and you said it best was, you know, you have, I don't want to slip the word, but you had said that you had, you felt sorry for him in that camp, and more than anything else, like, he would never get to know your kids and how great human beings they are and what they are going to become and what the mark they've left on this world. And they are, you know, John and Patrick, I mean, everything of good childhood, good parenting, you know, respectful, I mean, every good quality. But, and to miss that, and it's the same thing with my daughter. You know, my daughter knows her grandparents. She knows her, you know, the beauty is Tina's mom and dad, Megan was very close to, and that was the beauty. And so she had grandparents. She was over there all the time. She calls her, you know, all the time. And, but she knows Jane and Donna because they were there. You know, Jane, when she was here, Megan came back from work or something on break, and Jane was already here. I picked up the airport, and my daughter just, she couldn't speak. She just had tears in her eyes, ran over there because she hadn't seen Jane in 3 years, and laid on the couch with her, holding her, hugging her, just crying. And that's love. You know? Not to peck on the cheek and, hey, good to see you. You know? And I guess, am I sad or, you know, upset or disappointed that I had to? No. Because I don't dwell on that shit, man. People say, well, I know it bothers you. No, it doesn't. No. And you know, Matt, you know me. That shit doesn't bother me. You know, it takes a lot to bother me. You're not going to get under my skin, believe me. It's pretty damn thick, and there's no openings. And basically, I don't care.
But again,
and people, but again, I've had therapists tell me, oh, no, you do care. And I'm like, shut up. No, I don't. I said that. I don't care what your medical book or your professor told you. Okay? If they say there's a human, there's no human being that exists with that much, you know. And I'm like, I'm not angry. I'm not hateful. I love them to death. You know? But I'm tired. And what it taught me was I can go through life trying to care and having no chance to turn the outcome my way or to do anything, or I can just move on, accept it, understand what the new normal is. And the new normal changes every day. Every day. Yesterday's normal is not today's normal. Tomorrow's normal is definitely not going to be the same. I mean, you got to accept that, man.
Yeah, but again, I would tell people that this is, I didn't do this, you know, no. It's not what I signed up for. I just being a son, and let me tell you this, I'm a good son. I'm a loyal, good son, but I'll tell you what, you know, when you don't want to be part of it, I mean, okay, I got the memo, okay. I got the memo.
Yeah, don't tell me twice.
Yeah, but again, as a kid, and you come back because this is your family, and you do it over and over and over and over and over, year in and year out, until finally it dawns on you that it's this thing that you kind of don't want to admit, you know. I kind of don't want to admit that. He must not give a shit, man. What?
Right.
What? Yeah, that's the truth. And for people that never have to experience that, you know, it's, and again, like I said, part of me envies Mike because, I mean, he kind of started out like that. I didn't. I mean, it got blowed.
Yeah, you had it crash around you.
Yeah, it got blowed up in my face.
Yeah.
And so, and then I get this. Oh, but it must have been such an awesome time. You know, your dad was in baseball, and Yeah, yeah, that was awesome. I went to work with my dad. You know, that was awesome.
Yeah. But you didn't want a baseball coach as a dad. You wanted a dad.
Yeah.
Not a coach of a Major League Baseball team.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate that, too. I've heard that. You know, people are like, oh, it must be so awesome to have. Sure. But, you know, at the end, I wanted a father.
Yeah.
I didn't care if he was president of the United States. Great. Happy for him. Not what I wanted. But
hold on, let me read you an email.
Defined. Yeah, go ahead.
Holy shit. Who started this therapy? Who started this therapy session? Did I hear this shit right? Gunner's adopted? Did they hear that shit right?
Yeah.
And Mac, I always thought, given the way you talk, that you had a pretty happy childhood. Well, part of it was happy. Okay? But that was many moons ago, as Mike's people would say.
Yeah, as my native, many, many, many seasons ago, when the deer ran with the antelope in the plains.
Exactly. Many moons ago. But again, I'm like Mike. I've made peace with it. You know, you don't get to dictate the terms of your life. You know, you have to adjust as life comes at you, and you have to convert it into good. And you do that as best you can. And that's the challenge of life. And it would be great if it could be on your terms, but it's not. And so accept it and do the best you can. So I again to talk about, you know, to what Mike said, I think it's incredibly sad for people that don't embrace their families and don't love their families. You know, because, you know, again, the biological relationship is nothing to me. I'm closer. I talk to five people almost every day, and there are battle buddies from Afghanistan, and that group will grow as two or three others get off active duty. We don't want to blow their phone up with 50 text messages when we argue about something. So we respect that.
But, and we don't want them to get investigated by somebody we're talking about.
Exactly. So we leave them out. But it'll grow. And aside from that, I have two sisters and two cousins that are the closest people that I know on the planet. And the reason they are is because they perform their way into that circle. They have performed their way into that circle. And that's my life, in addition to my four kids and my ex-wife. That is my circle that I love and I cherish and I prize. And again, I wish it was some other way, but I didn't control any of that. And so it goes. So I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. It's hard when it happens to you, but you know, but it is happening.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. Yeah. But yeah, you're right.
Here's another email. So is anybody getting paid for this therapy session? All right. What is
what do you mean?
They're calling this a therapy session. Is anybody getting paid for this therapy session? You two got some issues.
No, but we don't. See, there's the problem. That's the problem right there, what they just said, what we're trying to explain. How do we have issues? Because you're judging us off of what you think normal is. That's the problem we live in. I have no issues if I'm successful in life. I live in a beautiful home in a beautiful city. I got great friends. You know, I do great things. I mean, what more is there? I have a great family. How am I have issues? I definitely don't have issues.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Here, listen to us.
And if you know me on a personal level, come on. you know I don't have issues.
Oh, he got issues.
If anything,
he got issues. Yeah. They're not those kind of issues, though. Here's another email.
Well, that's the problem, Mac, right there. That was the whole problem of what we were trying to talk about, is the fact that there's a preconceived, like, what we think normal is.
This one's called Bingo. Mac, that was great. It is centered around how you treat other people, not blood. It is so hard to deal with when your children take that road of self-exile from your life because of how they deny the truth as truth. They have allowed others to manipulate them into a twisted version of the truth.
Right.
You know what? And the only thing you can do is you have to be true to yourself. And hopefully by the way you live, they will come back to it. Because you can't deny the truth. You can try, and you can, and Montana man is near his phone today. Is he?
Oh no.
He's on probation for another 11 months.
So yeah.
I don't know that. He bombed.
On probation for like 11 more months.
he bombed this out. Oh. He's got issues. That was kind of like his response when we said that we were impartial jurors in the adjudication of his case. He said, I never even got to represent myself before an impartial jury. And Mike's response was,
not a democracy.
Mike's response was, it's not a democracy, but we are impartial. To which he didn't respond well to that. But yeah, you know what? I've never had that happen to me relative to with my kids. And I do think there's an art to parenting. But again, kids have, when they grow up, they have a vote too, and they get married, and you know, sometimes, you know, whoever they marry can influence them. But the only thing you can do is be the consistent, loving person that you've been. And I think over time, goodness wins. Goodness wins.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, not always. That's like that old saying, like, well, you know, he'll get his someday. You know what? Sometimes it doesn't work like that.
No, sometimes people go through their whole life and being, you know, just ignoring everything that we think is normal, and they lead a successful, you know, a happy, successful life. They don't get theirs.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I always laugh about the whole karma bus, you know, and stuff like that. Sometimes karma doesn't hit you.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah, he's got issues.
Karma is the life's randomness. We talk about, you know, the difficulty people have about why did he die and I live, right? It's the randomness of life. And karma is really just the bell curve of life. You know, sometimes good things happen, sometimes bad things happen to you, and then when something bad happens, somebody says, that's karma.
You deserve that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we try to make sense of it. But because it is a bell curve, there's some people out on the fringes of that curve that are not good people that aren't going to get touched. And so karma, not so much.
Yeah, but see, Rob's not getting it. Rob, you don't have issues.
Rob's got issues.
No one has issues. Rob's a normal guy. He's a normal person.
He's a cream stealer. He was tagged a cream stealer in Afghanistan. And then the Marines, because he stole cream all the time for his coffee, the Marines hid the cream. And then he would come in and bitch that there's no cream. Yeah. It's because you're a cream.
Yeah.
It's because you're a cream thief, man. Straighten your shit out. And then when I told him it, then he got pissed about it. What do you mean I'm a cream thief? I'm not a cream thief. Yeah, you use a lot of it, you don't replace it. So, come on, man.
That's a thief.
That's a thief. So
how come I didn't know about that?
I don't know.
I'd love to. I'd love to know about that.
Because those are the things when you're deployed that you can actually get under somebody's skin about. Hey, Rob, man, did I hear that right? You're a cream thief? I'm not a cream thief! You could only hope to be there when that happens. Being a cream thief.
So let's clarify before we get out here. I think people are, listening going, God, those guys, no, listen, I'm happy how everything turned out. I am. Do I wish it was different? Sure. Why not? I really don't. I mean, because I don't know what that would be like. Right.
Yeah, so
it's an unknown to me.
Yeah, define different for me before we go there, because I'm not. If it means that I'm going back to the pain that I used to live and the disappointment and every family event being fucked up. Sorry, I'm gonna pass on that. Love you.
Right. Love them. Yeah, I do, and I really do, and I care about you. I really do. But it's like, I can't be in that though. I can't be, that to me is having an issue. That's like an abusive cycle relationship, where you just stay in just because, he loves me, and his way of showing it to me is abusing me. My family loves me. The reason they love, how they show it is by ignoring me. what are you talking about? But you're right. We put too much emphasis in society on the family thing. But if it's not, and I'm not saying that if you have a great family, that's great and I'm happy for you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But if you're not and you're trying to make it work and you're not getting the feedback from somebody else, then you're verge on the definition of insanity. You're attempting to do the same thing for getting the same outcome, but expecting a different one. It's just crazy to me.
I used to argue with my mom about this, and I told my mom, I said, Mom, at some point, you have to preserve yourself.
Right.
Unless you want other people to destroy your life. And
sign me up. Yeah.
Well, and my mom dealt with this guilt because somehow or other she thought it was her fault. My mom used to put these Ann Landers articles on the refrigerator at our house, and it was always about parenting and mistakes parents make, and kids have a vote,
right,
and all that kind of stuff. And they'd be on the. My mom was into Facebook, right? When Facebook was the refrigerator, and then they had magnets or whatever I think that you hung them on. But yeah, my mom was into Facebook long before Facebook got invented. And it was for her, she struggled with it. And at some point I said, what happens if it's not your fault? I mean, we all got raised in the same house. We had the same rules, right?
Right.
But we all turned out pretty different. What happens if it's not your fault? And she just struggled with it for a long, long time, that somehow or other she did not give, her kids something that they needed. And I guess maybe I that might be natural as a parent. But I told her is, look, there's only so long that you can allow them to come back and destroy your life. And then you got to put them at arm's
distance. You got to survive.
Yeah,
you turn into a survivalist.
Yeah, you got to create some space, so they can't come into the inner sanctum and annihilate it, and then just walk out.
So, I always tell I always think like, well, okay, people say, well, I wish it was it could have been different. Well, let's play this out. What if it would have been different, and I turned it up to be some lousy son of a bitch?
Yeah, that
amounted to anything.
Is that a better outcome?
Yeah, is that a much better outcome? Because again, just because you have the security of a family doesn't guarantee your outcome of success and everything else. That's you. That's what you do in the face of adversity. You decide to get back up, brush yourself off and go at it again, or do you just give up?
Here, listen to this one. Both of you sound like intelligent, sensitive people. I can imagine if you're this way now, when you were younger, you were that way as well. To experience what you experience when you are put together like that is pretty rough. I think you both have done pretty well navigating it, although certainly we all wish it could be better and more like a Disney movie. Life simply isn't that way. Well done, boys. Yeah, you know, I wish.
Love to have a talking meerkat like on Lion King. It's just the Disney one. That'd be my one wish. I want a talking meerkat.
Right after I get the 45 made out of a meteor, I want the talking meerkat.
I want a date with Cinderella and Snow White.
Both of them. When we were having the discussion about the guy I know in Afghanistan telling his brother, hey, kill yourself, be a man. Either kill yourself or go to rehab, but stop destroying our family. You've already destroyed most of it. You've almost put mom and dad in their graves. And, you know, my two daughters, you know, Colleen and Catherine were talking, and they were like, oh my God, how could they say that? I said, you know what? The fact that you can't understand that makes me happy. Because you can't fathom a life like that.
Right.
And I said, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
You know, I was a sergeant in 1-5 and I screwed up. Well, looking back, I should have handled it differently, but I had something very similar. I was a sergeant, I was a special leader, and I had a kid. One of his buddies came to me and said, you know, Sergeant Musselman, John Doe wants to kill himself. And so I said, what? Okay. So I went to his room and I told his buddy to go away. I sat down with him and I did the, hey, what's going on? And we talked through it and we did all the stuff and I could see there was something that, you know, it wasn't a real, you could, and I wasn't a trained professional by no means, and I don't suggest this to everybody. Something clicked and I was like, this guy doesn't want to kill himself. And this is not even a cry for help. He's just a pussy. You know, and every time when something goes wrong in his life, he's going to, you know, this is going to be an out for him. Oh, I want to kill myself. People are going to come to his rescue. They're going to elevate him. And they're going to try and forget that it ever happened and move on. You know, this is his rescue. So I was listening to this guy's talk, and I said, really? I said, you know, how did he thought about killing yourself? And he looked at me because, like, shit, no one said this to me. I'm not prepared to answer this. And he said, well, you know, I don't know. And I said, well, let's talk about it. Come on. So I walked outside, and we're in the old BEQs right across from the old gym at 1-5 down the hill from the PX. And we're the ones, the armory's behind us, and the gym is in front of us. And I don't even know if they still exist.
You mean?
So we're on the top.
You're talking about, are you talking about Margarita?
Yeah, and Margarita, 1-5. So we're at the top of the top.
I'm the only person listening that knows what you're talking about.
Yeah. So the offices were in the center. You know, as you go up the stairwell, all the offices were right there.
Right.
So I had an office at the very top, and we walked out, and I leaned over the railing, which was not very far. I mean, not really. Despite a lot of Marines didn't fall to their deaths when they're drunk. It wasn't really a high catching feature. So I leaned over and I looked and I said, hey, if you jump from right here head first, you got to make sure you go head first. You got to hit the concrete or the sidewalk. If you miss and if you chicken out and you don't go head first, you're going to screw up and you're going to end up in the hospital and everybody's going to laugh at you. So jump head first. Make sure you go. And this kid is looking at me like, well, you know, this is not how it goes. And I told him, I said, just like this, you know, same thing. I said, not in the most direct way. I said, but you need to do it right, man. Don't leave a mess. Don't do it in some place where someone's got to clean your shit up. You know, go do it out. Blow your brains out in a field somewhere. Go do something, you know, that if even if you screw up and you miss, you bleed out. You know, don't be a pussy. Do it for real. Kill yourself. And things, you could see this clicking. I'm like, it worked. And thank God it worked. I mean, shit, because he would have killed himself. But I remember that, and I don't know why I did that, and it worked. It was the only time in my whole life that I actually called someone out on a bluff like that. And I know people are like, oh my God, you can't. And I know. Don't have to, you know, tell me again. But it worked. And to this day, you know, and I don't know what he did with his life, but I know he made it through 1-5. And he turned out to be a pretty good kid. So, kind of a weird, I remember when you were telling me that, I was like, oh, shit, I remember that.
Well,
I'm glad that went,
know, again,
to go south.
I'm talking, well, yeah, we all are. But, you know, that Chris Kling was on and said, hey, you know, when people go down this road, the currency they play on is compassion, and compassion in the form of money. I'm going to kill myself, or you know, I don't have a cell phone. I don't have this. Okay, I'll buy you a cell phone. You know,
that will take. Yeah,
I'll pay for your car. Just, you know, don't kill yourself. And they said, look, the only way this turns itself around, because this is destructive behavior, you can't save them. You have to let them experience the pain, and it's the pain that will turn them around. And but he said this, and I think this is true. He said it's one thing to talk about it; it's another thing when it's your 19-year-old or 17-year-old,
yeah,
heroin addicted daughter. He said then it's not the same discussion, and it's the truth.
Right.
It's the truth because you know you're terrified that you're gonna get a call. And she's going to be dead. And you don't want that. She's your baby. And that's what you see when you hold her. And you see all her better angels. And she just needs to get through this. But his point was, you know, tough love is the route to changing them as people.
Tough love is the best love. Because it's tough. You're forcing yourself. Just like, you know, when Megan used to grow up, and she's looking at me now, she's not going to say anything, but when she grew up, the one thing I used to tell her was, and I still do today, I'm sorry, I love you so much that I got to be an ass.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And if I didn't give a shit about you, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't care where you were. I wouldn't care what you're doing. I wouldn't care, you know. That's why I ask those questions that bother the shit out of you, because I give a shit. You know, I'm sorry. And she looks at me, you know, when she was younger, she'd roll her eyes, go, okay, Dad, I get it. But now she really gets it. She's like, all right, I got it. You know, and, you know, we talk about things.
But Mike, you live that, because we've talked about training and I remember you talking about, I love you so much as Marines. I care about you so much. I'm going to train the living shit out of you.
Yeah.
Right? And your life is not going to be put at risk because you're not prepared to go where we're going to go or do the things we're going to do. You are going to be free.
Well, your blood's not going to be on my hands.
Right.
Right. When you die, you know, it's not going to be on my hand. So.
Yeah, you know, again,
that was the whole thing.
It reminds me of a conversation I had with my oldest. Right, wants to get a motorcycle. He's in college. He was waiting tables at my friend's restaurant, and he was making a lot of money because it was a great restaurant. It was always busy. You know, the food wasn't cheap, so people that had money went there, and he was making a ton of money. I'm thinking about getting a motorcycle. Okay. And have you bought one yet? No. Okay. I said, as your dad, I would ask you to grant me one favor before you do that. And I know he was thinking, oh, here we go. I said,
right.
I just want you to go to the morgue with me. Okay? I want you to see what dead is, and then do what you want. And he looked at me, he said, what? I said, just go to the morgue with me. Okay? Because the thing about motorcycles is, I know they're great and all, but what'll kill you is not you. It's somebody else, and you don't even have a chance. So
there's no walking away from that one, man.
Right. And so there's no do-over. So I just want you to see what dead is, and then I won't discuss it with you anymore. You do what you want to do. He said, okay. So about 10 days later, he comes to me and goes, we don't need to go to the morgue. I said, why not? He said, I'm over it. I said, okay.
Right.
Look, I said, the only thing I want you to know is you're defenseless. You can die and not even close to being your fault. You just, and again, that's a fair
enough.
Yeah.
You can be the best motorcycle driver. It's not you.
Right.
It's not you that's going to kill you.
Right. And so look, if you want to assume that risk, and that's your, you know, you're 21 years old, you know, you can. I just want, for the sake of your mother and your two sisters that look up to you and your brother, I just want you and me just understand what you're doing. And that's the only request. Now, when I told that story, people are like, you were going to take your kid to the morgue? Like, look, if you won't look at a dead body, and then, come on, what are we raising?
Right.
We raising daisies? I'm not. So
there goes that thing again. That's not normal.
Yeah.
You know what? Take your normal and stick it up your ass. That's what you can do with your normal. Because there's no such thing. And I'm tired of hearing that. That's not normal. Really? What's normal? You?
It's normal for me.
Yeah, normal for me. You know, normal for you? What are you talking about? How can you pass? It's just ludicrous to me.
No, you know what I hear? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Look, God bless you in your little ignorant bubble that you can't fathom that, okay? And
right.
I so want to be you right now, but I'm not. I'm me.
Yeah.
So
I've said that too. I think that's my comeback to a lot of things. I'm like, God, it must be so cool to be you. And they get it. You know, and they're like, oh, why do you be a dick? No, I'm not, man. Because you're always right, and your normal is like what I should live for and strive to be. It must be wonderful to wake up to be you every day.
Yeah.
And they're like, dude, you're being a dick right now. No, I'm pointing out the fact that you're being an idiot and an imbecile by pointing out, you know, me by be doing this. Don't say stupid things like that. You know? And they finally get it after a while.
Well, you know, and again, if you're fairly bright, I think you pick up on it pretty quick. The Red Sox have activated left-hand pitcher Chris Sale from the 10-day disabled list. The Red Sox are on the march. But again, not everybody's life. You know who I envy? Mike's wife, her dad was always her daddy. He never fell off the pedestal, and it was like the coolest. It was the coolest thing, but you know, Napa Man's old man. You know, he's a big dude, and he's a good dude. And you, when you're around them, you know, you see this father son thing. That's awesome. But not everybody has it. Not everybody has that. Not everybody has that. And
nor do I want it.
No, I don't know
what the outcome would have been.
Right.
If the outcome would have been different than I'm living right now, then I don't want it.
Oh. How about if the outcome would be the same except better?
How? What's better?
Huh?
What's better?
Let's see. What's better?
Spending $1,000 a month traveling to go see? No, that's not better. Right? Am I right?
Well, I'm not sure why you have to look at it like that.
I'm sorry.
Why don't we look
at this in a rational...
No, why do we have to go to the expense ledger right away? Why was that the first card that had to be played?
Oh, that wasn't the first card. Okay, you know. There's a lot of that. But, I mean, it's like I said, I'm happy
right. The
way things are.
Right.
And, like I said, do I wish they were better or different? I'm not saying better. Different? I don't know.
No. Well, no. Only if different was better, then I would consider it.
Yeah,
is
look
different
in
better?
Your crystal ball, you normal person.
Yeah,
you're gonna tell me what different would be look like.
You're gonna give me some Disney dust? Is that what you're gonna give me? If you're gonna give me some Disney, then
work that on your own. Yeah.
Then I'm okay with Disney dust. You're gonna Disney dust my life? Everybody's good. This is awesome. Hey Mac, I unfortunately missed the first 2.5 hours, but picked up with you and the Gunner talking common sense. This is good shit. And that's a Vacaville, man. It's life. You know, it's life. And you can either bitch about it or this is one of my things.
Or
about,
live it.
Yeah. This is one of my things about the way we raise kids. All right. Life's not for pussies, man. You have to be, life is, you better be tough. And you better raise your kids to be tough. And if the thing you ask them all the time is, how does that make you feel? Dude, the world is not waiting. The world doesn't give a shit about your feelings. You know?
Right.
And so,
yep.
if that's
the
way,
last thing they care
yeah,
about.
That's the way we raise young people. You know, about the most important thing is how it made you feel. Let me tell you, the last time anybody will even talk to you about that shit is your last day in high school. After that, right, you better be to work on time, right? You better make your car payments.
If you want to keep a job.
Yeah, exactly. You better make your house payments or your car will get repossessed and you'll get evicted. That's how much people...
Better pay taxes because IRS will be there with a microscope in your ass.
That's how much people give a shit about your feelings. But kids, right? Kids... That's what they get raised on. How did that make you feel? Like,
poor thing.
Yeah, yeah. Michael does his impersonation of First Sergeant. Come here. Put your head on my shoulder.
Come here. It's going to be okay. Put your head right here. Oh, you poor little guy. It's like how I always, how you talk to a puppy, how adults, when they see a puppy, you know, you're talking like, hey, what's going on, man? Did you see the Giants game last night? Puppy comes around the corner. Oh, come here, you little cutie little. Come here. And that's my concept of counseling when it comes to the Marine Corps. You know, what? Come here, you cutie little thing? No. Hey, dumbass. You know, hey, I'll help you get back up here. Pick you back up, dust you off. And I'll walk alongside of you and help you through this. But I'm not gonna solve it for you. Don't come looking for the answer. I'm not gonna give you the answer. You gotta do this on your own.
Good luck. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No.
And that's why, like I said, lieutenants and captains were like, "Oh, Gunner, quit being a dick about this. Just give me this." No. No. So they come in my office. Hey, I got an idea. Okay. Shoot. And they'd tell me the idea, and they'd look at me, and I'd say, "Okay. You ready for my feedback?" They're like, "Yeah, stupid." All right. And then I said, "Okay." But then I'd walk, "Okay, so where are you at right now with your platoon or your company? Where do you want to be? What's the old man's preference? Where does he want you to be? Because that's kind of important, you know? The battalion medals come first, right? You build your medals, the mission essential task list within the company to support the battalion. So don't do it the ass back way. We don't in the battalion do it for you. Okay, you're not the center of the universe here in the battalion. So train your guys to support the battalion medals. And we go through this. And then by the time...
Hold on. Explain what medal is.
Mission Essential Task List.
Okay.
So the battalion is assigned a certain O plan, war plan, and it's got to perform certain tasks, certain mission essential. I mean, you got to do it. Otherwise, you're not going to accomplish the mission. Like a bridge crossing or whatever, or a river passage alliance, you know, those things in a relief in stride, relief in place in stride. You know, a lot of these things, they don't sound cool, but they're actually very complicated to do. And people don't like to train to them, but I sit down with them and I go through this, and at the end of the day, they're like, "Oh shit, we've been tricked." Yep, we've been tricked. You know, now we're doing this. this ain't cool and sexy. Yeah, you know, and I used to see that. Platoon commanders take over the platoon. What's the first training event on the training schedule? First thing. I mean, this is a second lieutenant. He wants to do a night insertion with helicopters, in an NBC environment, live fire. You know? You're like, oh, are you insane? How about we just kill you right now and get it over? Save everybody else in your platoon the headache.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you. This
teach them out on a land nav course and just teach them how to goddamn read a map. You know? Or how about to put on their NBC mask? How to clean it, maintain it, how to wear it. You know? These are the simple tasks that most Marines cannot do.
And it requires parents that love them to teach them how to do it.
And give a shit about you. When I say that, and I care about you, it means I care about you. It means I'm going to help you along. I'm going to work your ass off because I do care about you. But that's not how you care about people. You care about people by giving cookies and candy. No, that's why people that give you cookies and candy don't give a shit about you, and they want you away from them. They don't care how you turn out or what you do. They're just giving you treats.
We want you to be better, and if you are better, then you'll feel better. We just don't want you to feel better by giving you a cookie. The road to being better is not an easy path. It's going to require work. But when you're there, you'll know it, and you'll look back and
you'll feel it,
and you'll say, "Thank you. You grew me. Yeah, I grew your ass. Right at the end of my boot, I grew your ass." But that's what it takes. But again, our culture is not so much about it, man. You hear. You know, I laugh. I did it to Colleen. I got up her ass about her volleyball play. And the reason I did it, I do it deliberately, because you need to work harder. You need to practice more. Your team depends on you. They run that offense through you. You're one of the hitters. You got to be able to hit. You got to be able to hit. So you got to stay. And so, you know, again, long after I'm dead, when Colleen faces adversity, what I want her to hear is my voice. You can do it. I believe in you. Now get your ass out there and work, right? I mean, I was talking last night. We were driving home from volleyball practice, and we're talking. And she says, "I think I want to be a nurse." And I said, "Why don't you want to be a doctor?" And she looked at me. I said, "Be a doctor, okay? You can always decide opt out and be a nurse if you want,
or a paramedic.
I said, in retrospect, I did not even consider that as a life choice. To be able to help people your whole life like that, to ease their pain, to help them. I said, Colleen, I think that's an awesome life. So if I was you, I'd think about being a doctor. You know, you can always change.
See, I would have been a plastic surgeon, being superficial, narcissistic, more money.
And you don't have to deal with insurance. It's all cash.
And I don't have to do insurance like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's all cash. Cash or gold on the credit card.
And you can always just tell them, you know, when they come back in and their lips are about the size of baboons, and you say, your body rejected the substance. I mean, I can't predict your cells. You're different. But I can't speak because my lips are, so damn long. Sorry.
Who knew?
It's you that wanted it, yeah. Right. You're chasing the beauty. There's a price you had to pay.
And now you're looking at it. All right, what else you got going on? What else? Do you have any thoughts on September 11th, 17 years ago?
You know, it's sad in a way. Like, yesterday, it just hit me that today was September 11th. But it's also good in a way that it's kind of a healing process, right?
I think so.
It's not always on your mind, but you do think about it and you're thinking, wow, I mean, my life, a lot of people's lives, we all changed, by 11 a.m. that day, our lives were different. And, you know, again, then we went down the road and we can't turn back history. It's kind of a somber moment for me because you start thinking of, man, that's when it all started. That's when we were led astray by our own government. We did things. I'm proud of what we did. I'm proud of what I served her with. But, you know, it all started with that. And, you know, that's how it all began. That's how we're at today. But, again, I can't change it. Wish it would have been different. Wish it would have never happened. Then I don't know what life would have been like today.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's what I, in the first hour, that's what I said. It changed the trajectory of my life. I'd probably still be living up in Grand Forks, North Dakota right now. And I don't think either one of my sons would be in the military, in the Marine Corps.
Right.
And so, I mean, it had a profound impact. We wouldn't have started All Marine Radio.
We wouldn't have touched people's lives.
All these things that have happened would not have happened. And so that's the same thought I have. It's like the trajectory that that event has on Mike, you and I personally, our personal lives. Is amazing. Sitting, thinking about that day, and then how
we would have never met. Yeah. You and I would have never met. Yeah. We would have never went to war together.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
and I probably wouldn't have become a gunner.
Really?
I'd have probably been a you poor little thing, sergeant. So in that sense, my life would have been better because that would have been part of the establishment.
You would have been.
I would have been drinking the Kool-Aid.
You would
I would have been a get-along guy.
You would have been making the Kool-Aid, man. Come on.
Yeah.
You just got to hug more of them, right?
That's
Let me show you how. Let me give you a few techniques where you can hug two at once, okay?
So it's the only instance where, maybe my life would have been better. I always tell people, we'll get them on the radio. Ty Shot. T-Y Shot. He just became a gunner. He just graduated gunner school in Quantico. He's getting signed to 1-1. And he called me and, made my day. Cause he called me on the blue and he's like, "Hey Mike, what's going on?" And I was like, "Ty, you know, how things," cause, you know, I met him when he was a corporal, worked with him when he was a sergeant, knew him when he was a staff sergeant. He's just a great kid. You know, he's got that drive. He's got that caring, that belief in other Marines, always sacrificing his time. It was like a young me, but better. And, you know, and I never pushed him down the road. Well, he became a gunner. And so he was talking the other day and he said, I just want to call and prep the conversation because I want to spend some time with you and have a talk, but I want to pick your brain of how you did it. And I said, "Well, you know, we're all different, Ty." And he goes, "No." He goes, "Mike, I'll tell you something. I became a gunner because of what you did for me. What I saw in you, I was like, holy shit. So I decided that was going to be my life goal, that I wanted to do what you did for me to someone else." Then I was like, "Ooh, yeah. Wow." I was like, I felt good. You know, I was like, man, I did one good thing in the Marine Corps. You know, I changed someone's life around. And it made me feel really good just for the simple fact that I had an effect on someone's life. So it worked. All my bullshit. All my freaking having fun worked. Somehow, some way, it worked. But, again, life is funny, man. And don't take it too serious. And like Peggy said and some other people said, just make it a minute by minute. Just look. That's it. Don't look out any further than a minute. Just make it to the next minute. Before you know it, the day's done. And then the next day. And the next day. And just do good things, make people smile, have a good time, and try not to, you know, make it too serious. And you'll have a good life.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, do good things. If you do good things on a daily basis.
That's essential. Make someone smile, man. Make someone feel good about themselves. When you make someone else feel good about themselves, do you know how that makes you feel? Oh.
So I'm sitting here doing the show last week, and so I have Fox News on the monitor. The audio is not on, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this guy I've had on the program by the name of Larry Hinkle, who's from the Dallas area, so you need to meet him. He's walked across the country.
I heard of this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I look and I see Hinkle in the Fox News studio with his big bushy beard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is going on? And so I called him. I said, come on the program. So Hinkle comes on, and he's talking about, I said, you know, people say the country is divided, right? You walk through it. Give me your thoughts. He said, Mac, of the maybe 10,000 people that I've met doing this, I've had maybe a handful be nasty about it. I said, so that's not even a decimal point yet. He starts laughing.
Yeah.
He goes, this country is made up of like all kinds of awesome people. And then I said, well, what's it like to touch lives? When he talked about meeting a veteran, I said about this most recent walk he did was it was three American veterans, two guys, a girl, and then three British veterans, all either wounded or injured in combat. And they're walking to raise awareness. And he said, we're up by Mount Rushmore, which is a beautiful part of the country. If you've never been, that part of South Dakota is beautiful. The hills of the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Yeah.
Oh, man, gorgeous. So he said, and this Vietnam veteran kind of comes up, and he had something on that I knew he was a Vietnam veteran. And I just shook his hand. And I said, hey, man, thank you very much for everything you did. And he said he starts crying. And, you know, he said, we owe so much to you. And the guy looks at him and says, nobody's ever said that to me. Nobody. And I said, how does that make you feel? And he said, come on, man. It's the best feeling in the world to touch somebody's life. And so.
It is.
Yeah. And so really cool. But again, 17 years ago today, I mean, all of our lives were changed incredibly. And so, again, we remember that. All right. Anything else exciting going on today?
No. Just raining. It's actually, I like it. I love days like this. Just warm back up later this week in the 90s and shit. But as of right now, it's really comfortable. It's cool out. It's raining.
I
like it.
All right.
Grass is green, and I'm not paying for it. Get green. That's even better.
All right. Well, look, have a great day. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
All right. I'll talk to you there.
All right. There you have it. The one and only Michael Musselman. That'll teach me to ask where you're from. And that'll do it on that was bonus coverage right there. Thanks for listening on this 17th anniversary of a day that none of us will ever forget, that changed a lot of lives around the country. So appreciate that. Mac and Mike, get real. This is from the Almarine Radio head mother, Libby, someplace in Alabama. You guys will never be successful Facebook friends. You know, where everyone has perfect lives and loves to share their own that fake show. Yeah. We're not good Facebook friends. If you missed the program today, Hour 1 talked a little bit about September 11th and whatnot. So we remember that, a day we'll never forget. And then in Hour 2, Larry Hinkle talks about walking across the country again. Talks about what it's like to go into American communities all over the nation and talk to veterans and first responders. So he's a good dude. Hinkle gets it. So, actually, that's a great interview. I introduced the concept of post-traumatic winning that you will hear more about in the future. So, have a great day on Tuesday. Almarine Radio. Over and out.